Elder Geek. Join the Elder Geek T3 2010 team in their glorious adventure across the newly colonized halls of the LA Convention Center. Discover new additions to the video game phenomenon and the mysterious magicry that powers them. Nowhere in the world will you get as extensively awesome coverage as on eldergeek.com, which you can find on the interwebs. Hey everyone, and welcome to our Red Dead Redemption edition of Spoiler Alert. We were originally supposed to do Alan Wake this week, instead we're doing Red Dead Redemption this time. You know, circumstances just dictated that this is how it was going to be, so here we are. With me today I have Randy Yasinchak, the editor-in-chief of ElderGeek.com, and because he is so damned awesome, we couldn't afford to have a third guest. He's outrageous just that high, I'm afraid.
We also probably would have been doing Alan Wake if Gamefly would actually send the damn game to me. You know?
Exactly, yeah.
But anyway, so hi!
We're going to have an episode of Alan Wake with probably Randy and Cheyenne, the guy who reviewed it. So look for that coming up next, I suppose. It's hard to make promises, but I'm reasonably sure we can make it happen this time. But this time we are talking about Red Dead Redemption, and so to kick it off, we're going to do something new, and we're just going to start from talking about the actual introduction and starting portion of the game. It's not very peculiar. A lot of games start off this way, but it's unique nonetheless. So, Randy, take it away.
For people who have not played the game, but I'm assuming since this is a spoiler alert that most people will, it starts off with this really somber music, but really beautiful music, where you get off of the boat from a different portion of the United States and you are, you know, dropped into the end of the Wild West, and you're out to basically end the game. You know, like if you complete this first mission and going out and killing why the hell can't I remember the guy's name?
Bill something.
Yeah, if you kill Bill Williams. Yeah. Basically, that would be it. But you end up getting shot, and you get brought back to life You are healed by a very friendly rancher woman, named Bonnie Mar. No, not Bonnie Marsden.
Bonnie something Irish. McFarlane.
Bonnie McFarlane. Yeah. Yes. So, honestly, the beginning of the game starts off very atypical to Rockstar style. You know, typically Rockstar starts off where it's like, you know, bang, and you're right into the game and almost violently. But this is kind of a gentle letting into the game. Like, it is slightly violent at first, but, you know, as you are, you know, working your way back to health, that's when the game kind of runs you through all the tutorial sequences and stuff. Mm. And so it's a more gentle way to begin the game than Rockstar is typical to have it.
I would jump in, though, and say that the tutorial sequences are really tutorials for something you'll do perhaps 5% of the game, which is herding cattle and wrestling horses and chasing off coyotes said to, you know, scare them away from the henstock. So it's not exactly something you'd expect from a game called Red Dead Redemption. But as you play on, and as you get to the second, or I guess the big main first city, then you start getting more combat-oriented oriented experience and tutorials.
Yeah, the reason why they kind of start the game off that way. They want a bookend. This is spoiler alert, so, you know, I'm going to go right into spoil the shit out of it. But they totally bookend the game. It starts off as, you know, you going off to kill somebody, and then you get injured, and then you live a quiet life as a rancher. And then you go off and you live this terrible life as a bounty hunter, and then you slow your life back down again as a rancher, and then...
Something happens.
Yeah, something happens. Should I spoil it, or should I wait for a little bit later?
Yeah, let's wait a little bit and spoil the ending.
But it is, as if you once you finish the game, as you look over the entire thing, you see how very, I can't think of a better way to put it. It is very balanced, you know?
It's almost like a
poem that goes A-B-A-B-A, you know?
It's this inspiring story that they're telling about this character who's gone through the worst and best of it, and it's really quite beautiful when you think about it. I think also another point, you start to think as you play the game that maybe things are a bit more linked than you'd think, just because of the starting portion of the game. But then you also start to get this hints at that maybe they constructed this thing as they went along, and maybe they jumped back a bit and looked at what they had done and tried to reference that desperately into some portion of the middle and end game. Yet it always feels fluent, it always feels natural, and I think that's a really good accomplishment. They sort of carried through the starting portion of the game through the rest of the game and kept that, but they certainly change it up a lot. But they always sort of go back to that, hint at that, and sort of the way Marston, or John Marston, the main character, talks about his life back home and how, you know, he was saved by this cattle rancher Bonnie and everything. It always comes up in one way or another.
Yeah, it really does. And I was going to do a good versus evil kind of thing with this game. It was something we did a long time ago where I compared like playing through as a good person versus playing through as a bad person. And there really isn't a way to play as a bad person in this game. Like, you could do bad things. You could do plenty of bad things. But in the end, like, the storyline always makes it always makes John Marston a good person.
Yeah.
You know, so unfortunately there is no way of playing as a bad guy. Like,
I think
in terms of the canonical, you know, the canonical story.
I think also, you know, it's not that the choices you're given are good and evil, it's that they're less good and very good.
Right.
So you can choose to capture criminals and haul them off to jail, or you can kill them on the spot. And both are accepted in that time period. Both are accepted methods of completing your task. So it's not like you're going around killing innocent people. And if you do go around killing innocent people, which you can, you'll find that you won't survive very long anyway. So it's not like you can rank, you know, build up this... it's not like you can build up this
reputation. Negative karma. Right,
yeah.
Right. I mean, you can, and eventually, like, bad people start... You know, people in town react to you poorly if you're constantly stealing women and shooting up the town and stuff like that.
Hmm.
But in the end, like, the storyline always kind of brings you back as playing through as a good person. And even the main storyline gives you good karma points. So even if you are being the most ridiculous badass on the planet, the storyline always brings you back to being a better person or a good person. Which,
yeah,
I think is... you know, kind of an intentional move on Rockstar's behalf, that, you know, proving that John Marston was trying to leave that life behind.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? Like,
I think they learned a lot from GTA 4, because with GTA 4 you got, what's the main character's name again?
Nico.
Nico. You got Nico, and he is supposed to be this same kind of guy. He's trying to build his life in this new land, and trying to leave his old ways behind, right, with his new girlfriend and everything. But you continuously put him, Rockstar continuously put him in situations where he's just a psychopathic killer. And so that sort of deterred from your original impression of the guy. Whereas here, it's more like a means to an end. It's more, you know, John Marston just doesn't really have a choice. And he constantly regrets doing the things he does, and laments having to do them before he's doing them. So it's really is a means to an end, and not something he enjoys.
Yeah. He constantly says during and before his missions, you know, I'm only doing this to get back my family. I'm only doing this to get back my family. I think it's really well done. I mean, it's the bad guys in this game. I really wanted to kill, you know, more than any other bad guy, I think, any before. Like, these bad guys were just shitheads through and through, you know?
Exactly. And This, I want to point this out. It's a bit premature, but I want to point this out. Usually I play the bad guy in Marvel games. I play the, you know, the evil bastard who's just comically evil.
Right,
just
right.
Because I would never do that in real life, so I think that's a more interesting experience to play through. In this right. game, I did not want to be evil. They built this world so well that you empathize with the characters, and you don't want to let them down, and you don't want to let down the image of John Marshman. So,
absolutely, dude. The point, and actually, I kind of feel that way about the whole first third of the game, where you are in New Austin, or not New Austin, like the Armadillo area.
Yeah.
Not Mexico and not Blackwater.
Yeah.
I feel so bad for almost all of those characters, specifically Bonnie McFarlane, who, you know, in the storyline, actually gets kidnapped by these group of criminals, like, you know, and they don't show anything, but they make threats that she is going to be raped, and, you know, and go ahead.
I was going to say, when you actually get to rescue her, she is hanging by I guess it would
be a noose.
A noose, and about to be choked to death, basically, by a hanging. And when you rescue her and everything's supposedly all fine, you can see she has suffered greatly because she is totally beaten up and, you know, swollen all over. And yet she just shrugs it off like it's nothing, and she's fine. She's really, as John Marston calls her, a woman in a man's world.
Yeah, that's also part of, like, Bonnie's character, that she's, you know, she's the tough one. She grew up in a family of, I think they said something like 7 or 8 brothers. Eight brothers.
Seven of them died.
Seven of them died, and the one that's alive is an asshole in New York, who she says if he wears a tie, you know, she can't trust him, kind of thing. But in the sequence where you save her, I never played a game so brutally ever before. Like, I showed no mercy to the people in that were, like, holding captive. And I don't think that I you know, am the only person that probably played that way, you know, because she comes across as a friend. She's a person that rescued you, and she comes across as a very innocent person, you know, somebody that, you know, who is a rarity in this Wild West, so to speak.
And she obviously has feelings for you that you can't reciprocate.
Right,
that
right.
makes you kind of guilty as well.
Yeah, I would honestly almost vote her as one of the most sympathetic characters in video games of, like, all time.
Oh,
like,
yeah, there's, definitely, yeah.
You know, between the circumstances that have happened to her before the game, the circumstances that happened to her during the game, and just the way that things end off between you and her at the very, very end of the game, as she, you know, as she, with a smile on her face, sees you with your wife, and then just watches you ride off, and, you know, then the game ends. Well, not at that moment, but thinking about the last time that you see her is a very sad moment in that game.
Let's just spoil that right away, because what happens is that she sees that you and your wife visit her near the end of the game, and you are both obviously very happy and in love, and she is supposedly in love with you. And what happens is that, you know, her and your wife get to talking and stuff like that, and it ends pretty quickly, and you ride off into the sunset, and what happens is that this random guy walks by and says, "Hey, miss," and she just looks towards where you rode off and sort of traces
she kinda
her...
She kind of, like, toes the dirt.
Yeah, traces her toe through the dirt, and then looks to the guy and just walks after him.
Yeah, it was a great, great sequence.
Yeah.
Bonnie McFarlane, probably one of the most sympathetic characters in I think video games.
She just cannot catch a break.
Not at all. And you know, it's unfortunate. I think she was probably also one of the weakest voice acting, you know, jobs in the game, but still very acceptable job for what was done in there, you know. What else do we want to kind of spoil in this? I mean, we should be spoiling absolutely everything.
Well,
I think
we'll get to that.
We could probably talk about the game, you know, the storyline alone for nothing but an hour.
Yeah, definitely. But we have to talk about the gameplay and stuff as well. So, you know, as you progress through the start portion of the game, you learn pretty much everything you'll have to do in the game. Yet, I think what's very, very important to mention is that your equipment is very limited. You only have a rifle and a gun, basically, at the start of the game. And
a rifle and a pistol.
a rifle and a pistol, yeah, and yeah. And you you sort of have to stick to those two for a while until you get the first shotgun, and even that, the first shotgun is pretty useless most of the time, because most of the time you won't be doing close counter combat. So it's quite significant, I think. Usually games give you a lot of things to work with that right at the get-go.
Yeah, I think it does well to fit the period. You know, yeah. A pistol and a rifle, that's all you've got. You know, your pistol and your rifle and your horse that you'll probably end up shooting accidentally in the back of the head 1,000 times before the end of the game.
Indeed.
But, yeah, I think that it does a really great job of making you feel a part of the environment. The environment, by the way, I think is also one of the best that has been seen in video games yet.
I would say, because I recently played Alan Wake as well, I would say those two are pretty much at the top. I'd say Alan Wake is probably a bit better in terms of building a world and making you feel integrated and really, you know, building that whole escapism feeling. Alan Wake is just at the top of this. The sense of place in Alan Wake is just extreme. But that being said, Red Dead Redemption isn't far behind, and I think that's a really... really significant thing to say about when you compare a linear game to an open world game.
True. Also, I think it also is a very big testament to what Rockstar accomplished in the time being between GTA 4 and this game. If you pop in GTA 4 just after you play Red Dead Redemption, you'll be thinking, what the hell is wrong with my screen, or what's wrong with my 360? It's just that big of a graphical upgrade. You know?
Oh, yeah. Especially, I mean, just... the things volumetric lightning, does to this game is just amazing. The way the sun creaks through the open plains and the grass and the trees, and there are instances where you hunch down to skin an animal and you can see the sun shining through your elbows as you move them.
Yep.
So
yep.
It's just amazing.
And I will say this until the next great game. I know there's no such award for this, but if there was an award for a game for the best lightning storms, this would win it. This would easily win it.
Yeah, the way the rain in particular feels, the way it each time a lightning strikes, the whole screen flashes, and everything gets brought into the light for a split second, and just. Yep. You can see that the rain isn't just a thread going across the screen. It's really a drop of rain, and it's just sick.
Yeah, the puddles that are created on the ground, and the fact that they are like actual puddles on the ground. So if you run your horse through it, it splashes. You know, and the puddles actually settle in low points in the earth, and it's not like it's just like one big puddle here. They look realistic, like. Mm. I am honestly impressed that this was put together on a console. Like, this kind of thing I was only expecting to see on a powerful PC or something.
I'm not going to say that it's a complete physics engine behind the rain, but it's pretty substantial. It definitely seems like it is.
Yeah.
There's probably some trick behind it.
Oh, I'm sure there is, but, there's plenty of little tricks like that in almost every game, but that doesn't mean that it's not done well.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, as far as like going back to the sympathetic character kind of thing, I think it's kind of funny where you've got, when you first start the game in New Austin or the Armadillo area, there are many many sympathetic characters. But when you actually move down into Mexico, the number of characters that you actually feel sympathy for just kind of disappears. You know, like everybody that you think is actually a good person ends up being like a dick with ulterior motives, and
there's two people in total that are selfless in Mexico, and one of those you sort of lose this slither of sympathy for, because she's just so thick and
exactly
so naive, so you can't really sympathize with her, because you just, I guess, you can feel sorry for her, but you get so annoyed with her all the time that you can't really have the same relationship you had with her as you had with Bonnie.
Right. Yeah, and I don't know if Rockstar was trying to have you have that same relationship with her that you do with Bonnie, but it kind of falls, falls through the floor. I kind of feel, I can't remember her name, and
Louisa.
Neither could... Louisa. Yeah. Thank you. I felt more sympathy for her actual little sister who was just trying to escape from Mexico from the revolution. Like, her I actually felt sympathy for. But everybody else, like, really could have just, you know, they could have gone to hell for all I cared. And you know what?
Except the American, I think. He was pretty decent.
Even him I thought was a dick.
He was kind of superior, yeah, but at least he had clear motives.
He had clear motives, but, you know, at the very, very end, like, the way he kind of calls you out, he keeps saying, like, you're a nobody, and, you know, the only person that you tried to take down, you know, ended up leaving, and you're nothing but a common criminal. Like, he kind of treats you nice, but on the final mission that you have with him, he really kind of runs you through the, you know, through the dirt. And John even says to him a couple of times, he's like, I'm going to calmly ask you a final time to basically shut up.
Yeah, exactly.
I lost all respect for that guy. And it's even worse when you actually go back to the United States, into the Blackwater region where, like, you have no sympathy for anybody except for maybe the Indian.
See, yeah, except for Natas or something like that. I think, though, that they didn't create this super menacing final evil guy with the government agents. I guess Bureau FBI agents. The main guy, Edgar Ross, I think his name was.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
He definitely isn't a nice man, but you sort of see where he's coming from. You know what I mean? He is trying to. I think I sympathize with his ideals a bit, but not with the way he goes about getting them done. It's strange because it sort of feels like the game is lacking this huge evil baddie. But that kind of reflects how it's trying to be realistic, I guess.
Oh, I thought he was a huge evil baddie. Like, it felt as though that he was pulling the strings with absolutely everyone.
It did. But, you know, in the end, it's not like he's doing it for himself. He is doing it for his ideals. And his ideals are pretty basic. It's get civilization to flourish in the West. That's basically it. And, you know, given the way it turned out, I'd say it went pretty well. And he even tries he tries to spare as many lives as possible. He even goes around saying, you know, when you save the Indian Nadine from the trap he's been setting in one of the first missions in Blackwater, I think actually the first mission in Blackwater, he is very sympathetic and tries to get him help, and you know, it's not like he's a racist or anything like that. So it's he's a decent enough guy, only he's misguided a bit, I'd say.
I didn't think he was decent in almost any way. I thought he was just a bad, bad person.
I get where you're coming from. I do, and I disagree in principle. But again, I think he just
Nastas. That was the guy's name.
Yeah, Nastas. I mean, he's not as bad as he could have been. You know. They did certainly try to make him out to be a sympathetic, you know, or at least his cause to be sympathetic, even though...
I think that's what also makes that guy very kind of realistic.
Yeah.
You know, he's not a super-duper bad guy who just, you know, laughs from his ivory tower as you know, the you know, little people are suffering. You know, he's a manipulative, you know, bad person, which is the... worst kind of people in society, really. You know, the people in high power that are incredibly manipulative.
He clearly doesn't have a high opinion of the people he governs.
Which is
never a good idea or a good sign.
Right.
He goes about calling them degenerates and lowlives and all that stuff. And really, they're the people who pay his paycheck. But you do get the feeling that he fundamentally cares still. He fundamentally cares if the civilians and the Indians live or die. He doesn't see that as a high priority. Sorry.
I don't know about the Indians though, man. I think he probably was the type of character to not want to see them around at all. Because when they actually rescued Nastas, who was one of their informants, he said, "Take him to Doctor. God, I can't remember the professor's name.
Let's just call him the professor.
The professor. Yeah. He said, you know, take him to the professor because I can't understand these people. And then it turns out that Nastas actually speaks English. You know,
yeah.
Though, to be fair,
I think there's definitely some prejudice, but he did want to help the man. He did want to get him to a doctor to have him looked over, basically.
I think, but also just for his own end cause, like get him fixed up so that they can get back to their mission of, you know, bringing down these, you know, to bring down Dutch, basically. Dutch, who is your final person to, you know, kill off. You know, it starts off that you're off to kill Bill Williamson, but then once you actually kill Bill Williamson or turn him in, whatever you actually choose to do, they're like, oh yeah, well now you have to get Dutch, who was the leader of the gang, and you know, this goes back to this other guy who, you know, God, why the hell can't I remember anybody's names?
Javier Escuela, or something?
No, Javier Escuela. Yeah. No, Javier Escuela was one of the other people they had to capture.
Yeah.
The super duper bad guy. What the hell's his name?
Edgar Ross.
Thank you. So, I mean, that also shows how bad of a person that Edgar Ross actually is.
Oh, no, yeah, he was definitely corrupt and rotten. I just think he wasn't as... he was more human than we've seen other bad guys being.
Oh, yeah.
That's basically the point I'm trying to make. You can sympathize with some of his ideals, basically, just not all of them. And especially the way he goes about getting them is totally wrong. I'm not saying this was a good guy or anything. I'm just saying, in terms of bad guys, he was the most human and most relatable of them all.
Agreed.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, like, the original agreement between, you know, Edgar Ross and John Marston was, you kill Bill Williamson, and I give you back your daughter, your son, and your wife. Well, he killed Bill Williamson, and then he was like, oh well, what about Dutch? You know, we got to get Dutch now too, and so. You know, Dutch was not a part of the original agreement. He totally pulls like a Jabba the Hutt kind of thing.
Though I would say that this is a point that the developers fucked up a bit on, because before he even does that, before you even capture Bill, John Marston talks to one of the characters from Mexico during a mission, and he says that, we used to run in a gang together, me and Javier and Bill,
yeah.
And then the leader was Dutch, and after I'm done with these two, I have to go after him. So he clearly had the suspicion that this was going to happen at the very least. Or Rockstar fucked up, and they slipped that line in there too soon.
They could have slipped it in there too soon, or you could, you know, they might have also have it under the assumption that one, that he was done in the New Austin area, which is the reason why he was there, was to kill Dutch, that he knew he was going to have to go back to Blackwater and deal with Dutch.
Yeah.
And I think that might be it.
Yeah, and they also hint pretty early that you have to go back to Blackwater as well, because you get... if you do enough good deeds for a certain person, you get... you get a lease for an apartment in Blackwater from him. So, you know, clearly you have to go back there. I want to preface that some people would say that you get that hint from looking at the game map, but even though you see the town of Blackwater on the game map, it doesn't actually say that it is Blackwater. It could just be some other town for all you know. So,
right.
So,
right.
I'd say maybe they fucked up, maybe they left something out. Either way, it didn't really hurt the game that much. The structure of it still felt fine to me. So.
Yeah. Definitely. So, I mean, we really could go on for like hours to talk about, you know. Santa, we could talk about, you know, Irish. We could talk about the story and the characters for like ever, but
let's move on, let's talk a bit about Irish though, because that's a character that a lot of people had a few problems with,
particularly the Irish.
Yeah, exactly. The fact that he's called Irish and he is so stereotypical, it almost hurts.
But Irish also had, like, friends, though, that he was, like, running with, that he, quote-unquote, got off the bus with. And he was called Irish because he was from Ireland. Like, that was why they called each other that, because it was also, you know, he had a friend named France as well. And I don't think it
French.
Was because... French. Okay. Yeah. But it wasn't because they had... it wasn't because, you know, they're calling him Irish because they were being stereotypical. They called him Irish because it was just easier to remember where he was from than what his actual name was among these group of people.
Yeah, but, I mean, in terms of the story structure, sure, I get it. But, I mean, it's not like they couldn't figure out another story structure to take. And it's not like you wouldn't remember he was Irish because his accent is so obvious that it...
True.
Yeah.
True.
Accent. He is the little green... goblin with the hidden goal, basically. So
people took offense because he is the stereotypical Irish person, you know, drunk and, you know, dishonest and so on and so forth.
Womanizer,
but everybody in that game is drunk and dishonest. Yeah.
He's just a bit more.
Yeah, he's a bit more obvious about it. You know? So,
yeah. I want to talk about something else, and you just things are popping into my head all the time now. But there is a portion in the game when you are in Armadillo where you've stopped doing missions for the Marshal, and you started doing them for all these really shady characters.
Yeah,
we're talking about a con man basically who sells miracle cures to naive folk. We're talking about a guy who digs up dead people, and we're talking about Irish, who is basically an unsavory character just all around. So, at some point in the game, you get the feeling that you're not as noble as we once believed he was.
You do. But where do you want to talk about? Do you want to talk more about the Marshal, or do you want to talk about the other characters?
Both, I think. I think you know, they start off the game in Armadillo, where you really do stuff that's good for the community, and you're really this stand-up kind of guy, and then immediately they switch without any sort of resistance, sure, but not enough of. Not enough resistance from John Marston's part, and you really do this sleazy criminal work for next to. I mean, you have no reason to trust that these sleaze bags will actually do what you ask.
And yeah, Nigel West Dickens.
Yeah,
he is a sleaze bag. He's a snake oil salesman. He, you know, goes around and sells these tinctures and stuff that are basically just, you know, just like morphine and water and stuff like that, and cocaine and water, and yeah. He's this old dishonest man, and it is kind of funny. After you finish his missions, your cut of the pay after you win races and con entire towns out of their money, your cut of the pay is always like $2.
Mm.
Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I have, actually.
it adds to the frustration where you're like, you little old fucker, you.
But I'm just... Marston is obviously not that stupid of a guy. I'd even say he was kind of smart for the time. So, you know, why does he keep trusting these guys?
Well, I don't know if it's a trusting kind of thing. I think he's trying to build allies. And the only people that he can build allies with are these assholes. Aside from the sheriff of the town, the only people that he can really seem to get to side with him is Nigel West Dickens, who's a total asshole, but, you know, who wants to use, you know, John as much as he can. And through Nigel, you hear about, I can't remember the little guy's name. Seth Briers?
Yeah.
Seth Briers, who is this...
crazy guy.
He's this crazy guy who's in search of... You know, he's this prospector. He's off trying to find gold.
He's after this treasure that a dead man left behind. And he and a few buddies tried to steal it, but they split up the map to create equilibrium, basically. You know, he's trying to get the other pieces of the map from his now disgruntled partners so that he can find this treasure. And he's doing that by digging up their bodies.
Yeah, and threatening the shit out of his former... Well, Seth is gay, and he was in love with one of his partners in crime, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But still, like, you know, threatened to cut his balls off and stuff in front of him. It was pretty awesome.
Hmm.
Not his balls. I think he was gonna scalp him alive or something like that. And I think that Seth had one of the best lines in the whole game, and one of the scariest lines in the whole game, was when he like holds his knife and points down at the guy's crotch, and he goes, "I think you pissed yourself," you know. That was creepy.
Yeah, that was creepy.
But Seth is.
You get the sense that he could legitimately be a serial killer.
Yeah.
This really, really kind of menace, and yet you're helping him. So it's strange.
Yeah. Again, I think it's because he can't find any allies anywhere else. Seth, who is basically Gollum in the Wild West. You know, he even has like a second voice that he kind of speaks with, and he looks a lot like Gollum as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's just because he's finding allies where he can, and you know, and that's about it. I mean, could he ally with Bonnie McFarlane? Sure, but she's not going to be able to, you know, sneak a Gatling gun into Fort Mercer to take out, you know, your former partner who has an entire gang of people.
Yeah,
so, I mean, when you take over an entire criminal organization, you kind of have to, you know, mix in with the underbelly of society, so to speak.
Mm.
So I think that's why they have you mingling with these assholes, these seedy people.
I agree, but wouldn't you rather go find some regular old bandits? I mean, would you really talk to a guy that can barely contain himself?
I don't know, but he made it. He made for a very interesting character.
He did.
And again, also really sympathetic, you know, because you realize that he has gone absolutely insane in search of this
treasure,
you know.
And it turns out the treasure's a glass eye, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a glass eye that they found, and yeah. I loved that. And I think he was one of my favorite characters in the game.
Hmm.
One of the scariest characters in the game, but one of my favorites.
Yeah. Let's talk a bit about DeSanta, because it was interesting.
Yeah, DeSanta, another one. Wow, coincidentally, also, you know, another homosexual character in the game, who was a lieutenant for a colonel, I can't remember what the colonel's name is at the moment, in the Mexican army. Thank you.
Yes.
And, God, he was an asshole.
He was. He was this very power-hungry, manipulative, basically monster.
Yeah, but who also wanted to be... You get a feeling that he really wanted to be kind of your friend, but just did terrible things. You know, really, really bad things. Kidnapping women, you know, burning down innocent villages, that kind of shit. But
you also get the feeling that he kind of wants to just escape with his gay lover and just live on the prairie for the rest of his life and just enjoy life. But
yeah.
He's sort of stuck in this role of authority that he has to hold up or he's basically going to get killed. So he does all this strangely, you know, horrific stuff. And he seems to enjoy it, but at the same time, you get the feeling that he'd rather be someplace else.
Yeah, you kind of get that. You kind of wish that he was just out somewhere else, you know, boozing and living up life. But at
yeah.
the same time, you know, his current violent lifestyle is what is providing him this boozing, living up life kind of, you know, situation. So,
but it does. He and the colonel or the general, I think, the guy that leads all the battles.
Oh, right.
Both of those guys really enjoy fucking with people, it seems.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So,
definitely.
More so than even the Colonel Aliente himself. He just needs a quick fix now and then. He doesn't really take pleasure that much in fucking with people, basically.
No, and I played through the game twice, and the first time I tried to play through the game as, you know, this uber good person, but my second time around, you know, I actually could kind of give in to my more primal urge, and I put a shotgun round right in his face. Did you?
See, here's the thing. When he corners Bill, and you're left to decide to kill Bill or not,
uh-huh.
But what I did is the game fucked something up, so I went into the slow-mo thing.
Right.
I put a bullet in both Bill and his head. Because
yeah.
it says on the screen, kill Bill, so I didn't even actually know you could spare Bill.
I believe you can. I think if you kill the colonel, I think you can then take Bill.
Okay. So
I don't know. Here's what I did. My first playthrough, I killed Bill, and the other guy that's with you, Abraham,
yeah.
kills the colonel.
Yeah.
My second time through, I put bullets in both their heads.
See, what I did when I put bullets in both their heads in one slow-mo action, the game sort of froze. For like a minute or two, and nothing. I mean, the game didn't freeze. Things were moving around the screen, but all the characters froze.
That's an odd twist.
So suddenly it just jumps, and Abraham says, "Aliente is dead. Mexico is mine." And then, you know, nothing happens after that. Just everything's suddenly over.
I think that was just a glitch with you, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there was a little bit of conversation. Just out of curiosity, were you playing on PS3 or 360?
360.
Did you install it on your hard drive?
No, I did not do that, actually.
Massive. Here's a little bit of tidbit for everybody out there. The resolution on the 360 version is actually superior to the PS3 version. So if you have the choice, I do recommend getting it for the 360 version if you don't think your 360 is going to die. Also, if you install the game, there is a gigantic performance boost. Because it was something that they kind of conditioned into the game before they released it. They primed it for installation on your game. You're going to have way lower load times, you're going to have way less clipping, and you're going to also have way less pop-in on distances and stuff like that.
And
so,
yet, I still didn't notice much.
You won't notice much, but when you actually do install it, you'll notice that everything is a little bit crisper, everything runs a little bit smoother. It's noticeably smoother and crisper.
I think that the first time I noticed anything was almost at the end of the game, when you're traveling to McGarlin Farm with your wife, and the camera pans over the general store. At that moment, for like maybe 1.5 seconds, the general store sign still had the far away texture, so it was all blurry and stuff.
Gotcha. Yeah, install it. You'll see a huge difference. Huge.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'll definitely play the game again. I can say that for sure.
Back a bit to the reason why I played a second time. I always try to play games through that have, like, give you semi-moral choices. Once through as a good person, and then the second time through as a bad person. Hmm. I played it through as a good person, and you know, I was like, yeah, all right, I'll play through as a bad guy, but I'm not gonna do it like right away. I'm just gonna kind of ease my, you know, self into other games and stuff. But coincidentally, that was also the week that my PC broke, and when I started up my new game to start as a bad guy, I saved over my old file, so I did everything over again. It was kind of a shitty moment.
So you basically had to do all the side quests and everything.
Everything. And my second time through, I got 100% on the game.
So you spent a while on that. I think I spent almost 30 hours on the game. I just finished it today, like 2 hours before the podcast. So you must have spent like a while.
I probably put in 60 hours, maybe more. Yeah,
that's
a great game. It's really great game. And the multiplayer actually is not terrible. It's just not what I was hoping for. Did you get to do much of the multiplayer gaming at all?
I tried it for 5 minutes with a friend, and then I had to get back to single player because I was on a tight schedule. But it seems like GTA.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, it would be better if you had a group of friends that you could all kind of play together, because there are just way too many assholes out there that are playing the game that are like, they'll go into a town, wait for you to roll into town, and then just snipe you, you know? And then, like, you instantly respawn almost, like, right in the exact same spot, so they'll look for your respawn spot and shoot you again. And it's just really fucking annoying. Instead of, you know, you could be out trying to, you know, take over bad guy camps and stuff with a group of friends, and then really one guy will go in and ruin kind of your day. Mm. And it's not that great.
So how many people are in the posse?
I never reached a maximum posse, to be honest with you, but I think it's 16 people can be in a game session at a time, so that's probably 8 and 8.
So that's a lot.
Yeah, it is quite a bit, but it's also 8 and 8 in that gigantic game world. You know, so even though I was kind of being hounded a bit by a couple of assholes, every time I would notice that there was somebody anywhere near me, I was just trying to get one of the achievements where you complete all of the enemy bases in one playthrough, I would just, you know, automatically port to the other side of the map and play over there for a while. It was like, leave me alone, I want to play with my blocks over here.
A friend of mine tried the co-op with, he actually, the first time he played co-op, his girlfriend was over, and even though he didn't want to, she just said, shoot that guy in the distance. And so he sniped him with a headshot, and the guy was pretty far away on his horse, but, you know, with the auto-aim of this game, you can pretty easily kill people. So,
yeah.
What happened was that he suddenly got a big pling, and then it said, you killed a Rockstar developer.
Yeah. I got one of those, too.
That is awesome.
That was actually the first person I killed was a Rockstar person, because actually what had happened was I logged into the game, and Justin and I from 8BitX were doing the co-op, you know, together for our both first times doing it. And every time we kept spawning, we kept getting picked off. And I was getting really pissed. Like, I was just like, I just want to fucking figure out how this shit works. And so as soon as I respawned, as like a knee-jerk reaction of getting shot by everyone, I just killed the first guy that I saw. And it was a Rockstar guy. So, yeah, headshotted him. I was like, fuck you, asshole.
So after you did that, you probably realized that he probably wasn't the person shooting you, and he never would have shot you.
No, he wasn't.
So you pissed that guy off.
Probably. They're probably like, why did we even make this game?
damn fucking multiplayer. But I want to talk a bit about the gameplay before we get to the ending, though. So, I mentioned the auto-aiming, and a lot of people love the aiming in this game, and a lot of people hate it. I wonder what side you're on.
I'm on the field of where I love it, to be honest with you. And I think that if people don't love it, they should just go into the options and turn it the fuck off, because it's just a matter of one quick flip of the switch, you know.
Yeah. I'd say that I definitely see the reason they did this, because there is no indication of who's the bad guys, and there's no indication of, you know, where people are. It can be pretty hard to spot people if you didn't have the auto aim, because it's not like they glow blue, red, or something, you know. So you constantly get and you can't aim down the sights or anything, so you can't really zoom in and get more detail. So I found myself constantly relying on just being behind cover, popping out with the aim button on, and just shooting whatever the aim is at.
Whatever it was. Yeah, but you know what? At the same time, while the auto aim might be a little easy for some, you also do die pretty quickly. A couple of rounds will put you down. Health does regenerate, but it regenerates kind of slowly. It regenerates very slowly in the multiplayer gaming. But yeah, you can die pretty quick in this game, so I'm not too against it.
And, I mean, they throw like 20 enemies at you at a time later in the game, so you definitely need something to take them out quickly. I found that that I stuck to pretty much the
bolt action rifle.
Yeah, exactly, the bolt action rifle and the most upgraded new gun. I guess it's a Colt.
It's an M1911, actually.
Yeah, the same you have in Battlefield, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It is the exact same gun. It was invented in 1911. And it was an army issued gun. I can't remember what the conflict was that the United States built it for. Patrick would know. We actually did an article on the M1911 in a project that Patrick and I did before. But he was laughing his ass off. He was like, holy shit, you get an M1911? He was like, it's got to be like a prototype model. And I was like, yeah. It's like all black and shit.
It has a white hand grip, I think.
Yeah.
Like a ceramic thing or something.
But the guy that gives it to you says that, you know, both the army and the police answer to him. So if somebody were to give, you know, you a gun like that, it would have been somebody like that. So
I think they're obvious. I think they're obviously FBI. The Bureau was formed in like 1904 or something, and they always refer to themselves as agents of the Bureau.
Could be. Yeah, could be. So, yeah, they could be FBI. Yeah, they call it the Early Federal Law Enforcement Body. Yep, the Bureau of Investigation, which is now known as the FBI. Look at that. Hey, way to go, Mox. Woo!
I know a little American history.
Hey, you apparently know more than me.
Be ashamed.
But, yeah, the auto-aiming, I really was not that concerned about it, because it's not just the people that you have to really concern yourself with. It's also the animals. And God damn it, a cougar will fucking tear you a new asshole in an instant, and a bear will kill your horse within one swipe if you don't know he's there.
The cougar will as well, by the way.
Yeah.
And the thing with the bear is, it's always pretty easy to spot them.
Because you can hear them. You can hear them. They're like that.
Yeah, and they're
as
big.
They're running up.
And they're big. But the cougars, they can, you know, they prowl so low beneath the grass. And they just, you know, sneak up on you beneath the grass. You don't know they're there until they attack you once. And usually they attack you once and then run off. But if they manage to attack you twice, you're dead. And they can do that. Sometimes it'll happen. I don't know why they chose to do it this way. Sometimes they'll actually attack you twice within a second. So you have no chance to react at all, and you just die instantly.
Yeah, but I love that. I think that's great.
I'd say cougars aren't that powerful in real life. They're kind of small, but
but still,
You needed something to be more powerful than you in the game.
You needed something quick and agile too.
Yeah, and no enemy, one on one, can kill you if you know what's happening. Unless they, you know, suddenly shoot you from behind or something, you don't get the time to react. But a cougar and a bear can own your ass.
Oh yeah, and the worst is, like, a lot of times in the game, if you're in a spawn area that spawns cougars, like, after you kill the first one, as you're sitting there, like, trying to find a fucking horse, another one might gank you.
Yeah,
you know?
And especially,
and it's the same thing with bears.
Especially if you're like me in the early game, you kind of want to skin everything you kill. After a while, you start to abandon that because you realize just how risky and pointless it is when you discover what's the gambling game? Liar's
okay.
Dice.
Oh yeah, Liar's Dice. Okay.
You can make so much money on that thing. It's so.
Oh,
easy.
I was like a blackjack fucking king.
Oh, you
especially.
Are?
Oh yeah, and there's a suit in the game that you can get to cheat. A lot of people didn't quite get how to use the cheating mechanism in it, but cheating in that game is kind of great.
Yeah.
You know, you basically hold your card next to your body, and you hide one card up your sleeve, and you can like swap out cards as you go along. So, yeah, I made a crap load of money gambling.
I think with Liar's Dice, it's so easy to figure out the algorithm behind the programming of that game, so you can just cheat the game basically if you play it enough. I played it twice and I got it, and I never lost a dime after that. So
I know exactly what you mean. What was funny was I always told the truth, and I never had anybody call me out on it being the truth. I always had people calling me out as saying that it was a bluff. So that was actually
But those games take a while.
Yes.
What I did is I constantly one-upped whatever other people were saying. Never just... There are a lot of people that just go all out, or a lot of bots, I guess, that just go all out and go from 2 ones to suddenly 6 ones, just in a leap like that.
Yeah.
But what I would do is, you know, do 3 ones, and then that would usually not be enough for them to try and bust me. But if they did bust me, it would always, even though I didn't have another one, it would always kind of be true, because usually someone else had a one, especially in the early rounds where everyone has 6 die.
Yeah.
But enough about gambling. It's a very small part of the game, but it's an easy way to make money.
Yeah.
Also, another thing, the weapons. I love all the weapons, and they all serve a cool function, but you get so many of each weapon, especially the rifles, after a while, that I wish they would have let you sell them. Or at least store them away.
Yeah, store them away, like, in a safe home or something like that, because they show gun cabinets in the homes that you buy, in the apartments that you rent. They show gun cabinets. I agree, they should have... I would have actually preferred it if they made it so that you could only carry a certain limit, you know, number of guns. So
One of
each, like one pistol, one rifle, one shotgun. You know, that would have been great. Which would have been an awesome reason to actually go back into town, because there's two different types of pistol weapons, or pistol ammunition. There's revolver and there's pistol. So,
And the same with rifles. There's rifle and repeater. And shotguns only have one, and then you have sniper rifles in addition, which is a separate weapon slot.
Right.
But
right.
I gotta say, sniper rifles suck ass.
Yeah, because it's just a regular rifle that they kind of slap whatever on top of it. You have no need for it, really.
Yeah. And, you know, you need it in one mission, I think.
Yeah. But I mean, what I'm saying is...
Yeah.
The one in Mexico or the one on...
Yeah,
on
the one where you first rescue Reyes.
Yes. Yeah, that one you kind of do need it.
Yeah.
You're right. As far as, like, the weapons go and
Selection?
No, the what the hell do they call it when you go into, like, slow-mo, the blood time events, or the blood
shot
of
it? Yeah.
You basically slow down and go into Matrix mode. I love that. I don't like... It has 3 modes, where it has one where you can slow down and shoot one round, and the bullet instantly hits wherever you had pointed. A second round automatically picks targets as you move your cursor over it. And the third round allows you to, like, pick multiple targets manually. And the third version of it I really, really loved.
Mm-hmm.
Because as I was always running off with, guys on the horseback, you know, while collecting bounties, I would almost always, 99.9% of the time, either shoot guns out of their hands, which is pretty fucking great, or shoot their horses and watch them go flying.
Yeah.
You know, because... The Euphoria engine in this is amazing.
Why don't more games use that thing? It seems like Rockstar and maybe
LucasArts used it in what you call it?
something. Star Wars.
Star Wars. Force Unleashed. Yeah. I'm sure it's an expensive technology to rent or expensive technology to use in your game to license.
I think a lot of football games use it as well. American football.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But watching guys like feet get stuck in their spurs as their horses drag them off, or you know, watching them go flying off their horse as the horse you know eats the dirt.
Hmm.
Awesome. Awesome stuff.
I think with Deadeye, I have to just drop this in. With Deadeye, I didn't use it for like the first part of the game, basically. I didn't start really using it a lot until I got to Mexico. And the reason behind that was that everything was so easy in the first part that I didn't feel like I needed it.
Mm.
But after a while, you sort of... you just want to do it more because it's just that much cooler. And as well, things get a lot harder, so you kind of have to use it.
Yeah. I kind of in the Deadeye realm, and it gets ruined as you move up with the amount of, you know, your level in Deadeye is the dueling, which I think is broken.
I don't like the fact that you can't pull the trigger. You sort of have to wait for the time to go out.
Right. And you've got to, like, pick the targets. But with the second level of Deadeye, if, you know, where it automatically selects the targets, it will automatically shoot if you pick their hand. But once you're past that point, you've got to pick 6 rounds or 8 rounds or however many rounds you're...
Or you have to wait for the time to go out, basically.
Yeah, and it's kind of annoying, and it's definitely not intuitive. It is definitely the weakest part of the game, which is kind of a shame because, you know, dueling in the Wild West, that was like, those two things go hand in hand.
Let's explain exactly why, though, because what happens is that you'll get these challenges once in a while, like quite often, actually. They could have been so awesome, where you have to take out this guy in a classic Western duel. And everything's normal. You have to draw, you have to be the first to draw, and you have to tag places on the body for this guy to shoot this guy. And what happens is that once you tag, let's say I tag him in the head, then that's not it. I can't just shoot him in the head and be done with it, which would be really cool, by the way, if you just had one clean shot. That would mean the ultimate marksman, basically. But what happens is that you sort of, either you have to stand around like an idiot and wait until the timer goes out and you shoot. But then there's this balancing line. So if he actually tags you more than you tag him, he wins. And
right.
So what happens is that you have to tag him a bunch of times. You have to basically use up all the shots in your gun, which is anywhere from
6 to 15.
Yeah, 6 to 15. And so you needlessly just shoot a bunch of bullets into this guy, and it takes away so much of the immersion and the whole Western badass feel from it. It ruins really the whole duel aspect. Now, just using Deadeye regularly on, you know, regular enemies and wildlife and stuff, that is awesome.
Yeah.
But the dueling aspect of Redeye just completely ruined.
Absolutely. Well, we've actually been talking for close to an hour. I think we should go ahead and spoil the ending. What do you think?
I think I agree with that, actually. Believe it or not.
Do you want to spoil it, or shall I?
Go ahead. You're the guest.
At the very end of the game, like I said earlier in the show, the game is very bookended, where it starts off where you live this simple life as a rancher with Bonnie McFarlane as you're nursed back to health. But then in the very end, you know, you actually, once you kill Dutch, you have this, what I think is one of the greatest, most touching and most poignant, you know, moments in video games is when you actually ride back to see your family after you kill Dutch. Like,
this music starts.
Yeah, and this music starts. That is just epic. Like, I, you know, rode my horse home almost as slowly as I could just so I could hear this music and kind of let everything kind of seep in. That,
did
you know,
exact same thing.
Yeah, you're about to see your family that you've just done. You've killed what, you know, was one of your best friends, and it turns out he wasn't that big of an asshole in the first place. You know, he was just trying. He was trying to accomplish something.
He was trying to help the Native Americans.
Yeah, and you know, and you actually are part of the reason why so many of them died, and you feel bad, but you're like, at least life is going to go back to normal. Mm. So you go back home and you live a life as a rancher again with your wife and your son, and a man who you call uncle, who you are actually not related to, but you live a, you know, a hard life as a rancher, and you actually play that part of the game as a rancher for a few hours, right?
It
like
is,
about 2 hours.
it starts to get stale near the end, because it's not that exciting, because all you do is you go around with your son or your wife or your uncle, and you do basic chores for the farm. You shoot elk, or what I would call moose, to get, you know, meat and sell it and sell the hide and all that stuff to make money for the farm so you can survive the winter. You teach your son to hunt. You teach him to wrestle cattle. You teach him to wrestle horses. And
but you realize that all of those missions happen exactly in the beginning of the game. Like teaching your son how to hunt was when you're actually hunting rabbits with Bonnie. Yeah. You know, you capture horses with Uncle just like you did with Bonnie. You drive cattle just like you did with Bonnie, and you deliver goods to town. You deliver goods to Bonnie just like you did with Bonnie into town.
And you scare away crows eating the corn just as you did with the
rabbits.
No, not necessarily the rabbits, but the coyotes.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, all of the missions that you do with Bonnie, you do again with your family. So you create this sense of family. And then, in the end,
Let's preface, before you say this, the way they do this is that you are supposed to you're trying to reconnect with your son, and they have a lot of dialogue. Very, very much, they connect you to the family and make you feel at home. The player, not just the character. And they really build this family... this dysfunctional but still family feeling, and they really, you know, make you care. And then go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say that, you know, there's also this sense of kind of distrust, because you kind of disappeared for a while to catch all of your former criminal buddies. I think it's awesome, because your wife says to you at one point, you know, you went off and you killed off all of those bad guys, but what do you do when they don't have any more bad guys to kill? They're going to come after you. And then they do.
Yeah.
Basically, the army comes after you, and, you know, they kill off Uncle, your wife and your son escape, but you're gunned down in front of your own barn, you know, after you've paid penance for your past life. You've already gone out, you've captured all of your criminal friends, you've decided to live an honest life, but you've been dubbed as a villain in the eyes of the government who just used you, and you're dead.
Yes.
Go ahead, you can finish the rest of it.
And so what happens is, as your son and wife ride off trying to escape, they hear all the gunfire, and then they hear the stop of gunfire and talking. So what they do is they return to check on you. And they find you in front of your barn, dead. And your wife really just breaks and collapses in front of you and cries. And your son, which you've sort of mentored through this end experience and really tried to make him a man, he sort of assumes that role and takes care of her, doesn't shed a tear, and just helps her bury you and all that stuff. And so what happens is that they stand in front of your grave, and this really strange but kind of touching song comes on that sort of explains his situation. It's something like, "Don't bury me in the wild, wild west," and stuff like that, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and and time sort of slows down, and suddenly we see another grave appear, and it's your wife, and it's 4 years later, or 3 years later.
It's between 2 and 4, I can't remember.
Again, yeah. And you see this guy standing in front of them that looks totally unfamiliar at first. He has long hair. He kind of looks like Marston, the main character. And he has the same gear and everything. And he turns around, and it turns out it's your now grown up son, or young adult at least.
Right.
And the game kind of ends. But here's the thing.
It's 3 years, by the way. He dies in 1911, she dies in 1914.
Yeah, okay, 3 years. So, but here's the kicker. It seems like the game ends, but you don't really get the scrolling credits or anything. You don't really get anything like that, and you just assume the role of playing as his son instead. And he basically has all the abilities and everything that you would have, only he has a different coat and clothes.
And
a different voice, obviously, a younger. He's a bit more agile, it seems. He seems like he runs a bit faster. But you can go around and you can do everything that you didn't get to do before the game ended. With him, you can do all the side quests and all that stuff. But if you wait a few days and you go to Blackwater, what happens is that you'll run into this guy, and it's not a main quest. It looks like any side quest that you've run into the rest of the game, and you'll run into this guy, and you'll ask him a couple of questions, because he looks like the particular government type. And you'll ask him where Edgar Ross is, because you have to deliver a message to him. And so you get the information, and you go, and you find him eventually, and have a base Deadeye showdown. Again, a duel, basically, again. After some... I'd say canned dialogue, wouldn't you?
It was kind of canned, but yeah. Appropriate.
Yeah,
I think it was all very appropriate.
Yes, you end up killing him, and then the credits come, and you see you see him turn around after he kills him, and the screen turns to red, and you get Red Dead Redemption, and the credits begin.
So I loved it.
Yeah. It's the end that you can very easily miss if you put the game down.
Yeah, yeah, because it just like GTA 4, where like it's like, hey, and now you can just go and play in this open world. They're like, hey, you can go play in this open world with your son. But you know, I love that it doesn't stop raining. When after John Marston dies and you start playing the role of John Jr. or Jack, it doesn't stop raining until you track down Edgar Ross and kill him.
Yes.
I love that. Love that. That's so great.
It's sort of this strange symbolism that can be very, very confusing if you don't really get it at first.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I happened to run into him. I did not go looking for that guy.
Oh, I did.
So you assumed there was more. I kind of thought there would be a sequel.
As soon as I started playing as John, I ran right to Blackwater to seek my own personal vengeance.
Did the same. I went into the house where I knew the guy used to work.
Yeah.
And I found out I couldn't really do anything, so I broke a few laws and I tried to shoot the lock off the door and all that stuff. I had to figure out some way of completing my mission. So I started to think that maybe they were going to make a sequel where the main character is John Marston, the son of Jack Marston, I'm sorry.
Jack Marston.
Yeah, this is John Marston. But then, all of a sudden, I see this new side quest appear, and I was pretty sure it was an old one, because I'd completed almost all of them, certainly in that area.
Right.
So so I went over there, and then suddenly the whole thing began. I get, I kind of wanted a sequel with the son as the main character.
Time frame wouldn't allow it. I mean, the time period wouldn't allow it.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the West anymore.
Not at all. It gets very, very built up after that, you know, because, you know, right then you're going to be going right into World War One, and So there you have it. There you have it. Red Dead Redemption. I think easily going to be nominated for Game of the Year by a lot of sites.
And certainly ours. And certainly also as well. A lot of, maybe not Game of the Year awards, but a lot of best character awards and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. This will be an award-winning game. There's no doubt about it. You know, it's just going to be a matter of which awards does it actually take home, you know. So, yeah, there you have it. Red Dead Redemption.
That is it, yeah.
Did you like it more or less than GTA 4?
Oh, more.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. GTA is cool and all that, but only in terms of gameplay. The story's not nearly as great.
No.
The gameplay is, I guess, I don't know if it's better or if it's just different. You can spend more time in GTA without getting sick of it, I think. I don't know. It's strange. I definitely think that it's an upgrade in most ways.
Yeah. You know who we did not talk about was John's conscience, the I Know You side quests.
Yeah, basically the devil.
He's not the devil. He could be the devil, but I really thought that person was John's conscience. John Marston's conscience. Because he was like, I know you, and a lot of people think I'm the devil, you know?
Yeah, here's the thing. At the very end encounter with him, you lose your temper and you say, damned you, and you shoot him, and nothing happens, because
right.
He's obviously not human. But right afterwards, he says, many people have. And who do we know that many people have damned?
Well, I kind of saw it as, you know, many people damning their own conscience kind of thing, you know?
Maybe.
I really thought that it was his own conscience, to be honest with you, because, you know, he tells him, you know, here's this situation, here's my friend, you can either go tell him to stay true to his wife, or, you know, or you could not. He's constantly putting him into moral situations, you know, and
but he's not encouraging, he's not necessarily encouraging him to do good. He's giving him a choice, but he's not deciding the outcome. Or he's not saying one way is better than the other.
All right.
I feel like it's kind of, you know, suppose the Bible is true, then it's kind of like the devil's challenges to Jesus in the desert.
Could be. It totally could be. But yeah. I really enjoyed that guy. His side quests, by the way, are the only ones that you do not need to complete to get 100% in the game. Because if you don't do his side quests before John Marsden dies, they do not appear with Jack Marsden.
Yeah. And also, they're very easy to fail. And if you fail them, you won't, like, restart the mission or anything like that. You won't restart the game or anything.
In playing through as the bad person, the only one that I couldn't get to do as the bad guy way was actually the one where you donate to the nun. Like, I tried everything. I tried holding the nun up, because supposedly you're able to hold people up by, you know, pointing the gun at them while they're unarmed, but she kept running off, and then I was like, okay, well, I'll kill her, and both situations ended up in a you know, mission failed kind of sequence, so...
Mm. Yeah, but did it just restart the mission?
It did. The nun one, it did.
Okay.
The other ones are actually pretty easy to be the bad person. You know, instead of telling the guy to be true to his wife, you actually give him $15.
And yeah, like, say, go for it.
He goes, you need this. And the guy's like, I do. Thanks, buddy.
What happened with the nun is, I got the impression that I was supposed to, you know, guard her from thieves. But when I got there, she was just standing there and I had to donate money to her.
Huh.
So, I don't know, did that happen to you or...
I just walked up to her and it gave me the option to donate money. So I did, and that was the end of the mission first time around. The second time, like I said, I tried to hold her up.
Cool. Well, okay, that is it. I think we're out of time, but it's been a great run, and we'll see you again in 2 to 3 weeks, depending on, you know, who's played what game. These are sort of unregular, but I apologize for that. They're hard to do because a certain amount of people on the site have to play and finish a certain game. So it's kind of hard to plan out. But nonetheless, they are fun to do and we'll keep doing them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bye, guys.
I'll see you guys next time. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, bury me not on the lone prairie, where the coyotes wail and the wind blows free. And when I die, don't bury me 'neath the western sky on the lone prairie. Oh, bury me not on the lone prairie. These words came soft and painfully from the pallid lips of a youth who lay on his dying bed at the break of day. But we buried him there on the lone prairie, where the rattlesnakes hiss and the wind blows free. In a shallow grave, no one to grieve, 'neath the western sky on the lone prairie. Oh, bury me not on the lone prairie. These words came soft and painfully from the pallid lips of a youth who lay on his dying bed at the break of day. On his dying bed at the break of day.